Someone recently told me that I suffer from shiny object syndrome. I had to look it up. It turns out I do have it. Guilty as charged. And in fact, a lot of people suffer from it. Shiny object syndrome, as you may know, is when you focus too much attention on every new thing that's out there, every novel trend or movement or fad that comes up, but then drop it like a hot potato when the next new thing takes its place. And I know I'm like that. I do love new and creative ideas. I'm fascinated by them. It's why I love to go to conferences. I love to learn about whatever new thing is out there, new technique, new program that's in vogue, you know, in the great big world of church. But the problem is that people with shiny object syndrome, people like me, unfortunately, are forever distracted. We're distracted by the latest gadget and discovery or development, and we end up gravitating toward whatever seems fashionable and popular at the moment, while sometimes forgetting the tried and the true. And that can be a serious distraction, keeping us from staying on course and pursuing the important work that God has given us to do in this world. And that's why we developed this series called Focus, because we want to help you avoid or recover from shiny object syndrome and stay focused on what's most important, what's proven to bring joy and fulfillment, and what will prevent regrets later in life. Now, each week in this series, we've been exploring a different distraction, and we've been learning how to overcome that distraction. When the series first started, we began with a very dangerous distraction. We covered greed, money, and possessions. And when it comes to money and possessions, we said that the way to keep those distractions in check is by intentionally cutting back on spending and curbing our consumption in order to kind of recalibrate our sense of when enough is enough. Then the next week, we talked about leisure and hedonism, you know, kind of overindulging in the pleasures of life. And we said that the way to get rid of that, to overcome that, is by doing the opposite of leisure, and that is getting out there and serving other people, maybe joining a ministry or a mission right here at the church or doing something else in the community. And then last week, we looked at how conflict can distract us. And we said that the way to free ourselves from getting sucked into everybody else's drama is by keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus and, you know, kind of avoiding dysfunctional conflict or getting out of it as soon as possible. We also said that it's a good idea to escape all the noise and take some quiet time, because the more peaceful we are on the inside, the less likely we are to get dragged into a lot of conflict. There are lots of distractions out there, as you may have gathered from this series. And so today, we're looking at another one. We're exposing another shiny object that competes for our attention and has the power to divert our focus from what really matters. And the best place to start with that, understanding that distraction, is the gospel passage today. In the story, Jesus is passing through towns and villages on his way to Jerusalem. He is focused on getting to Jerusalem. That is his goal, and nothing is going to dissuade him. He knows what's going to happen there, and he knows how important it is. But on the way, he stops, and he talks to people, and he teaches them. And then today, someone in the crowd asks him, "Lord, will only a few people be saved?" Now you think about that. It's actually a great question, isn't it? It's an important question. In fact, it's the ultimate question, I would argue, for every human being. Whether or not you're a church person or a religious person or a person with no faith or somewhere in between, it's a critical question. That question should be important to you. Because we all want to be saved, right? However you define that, we all want to be saved somehow. The Catholic Church, of course, our faith, has a very specific definition of salvation, but the question is, what does it mean to you? How does it play out in your life? What does it look like and feel like to you? I mean, in whatever way you define being saved. We all want to lead a good life, right? We all want to enjoy the blessings of this earth. We want to have fulfilling relationships. We want to go through life with a sense of meaning and also experience hope for some kind of future when this life comes to an end. And if you never really thought about that question, what salvation means to you, you could maybe spend a little time today thinking about that question. Now, in the story, Jesus doesn't say, he does not say what it takes to be saved. He just replies, strive to enter through the narrow door, because many will try to get through that door, but they won't be strong enough. That image of getting through the narrow door in order to be saved, I don't know about you, but that's pretty unsettling to me. Even more so because of the word strive, when he says strive to get through the narrow door, it's actually the better translation of that is fight. Fight to get through the narrow door, to reach salvation. And Jesus is saying that for many of us, being saved may be a bit of a battle. But then the image becomes even more frightening when Jesus says that this narrow door, hard enough to get through as it is, will be locked from the inside. Then will you stand outside, he says, knocking and saying, Lord, open the door for us. You see, Jesus is talking about two crowds. He's talking about a crowd, a mob, that's trying to get inside the door. They were the ones, they will say that they were part of the crowd who were with Jesus on the streets. They want to get inside that door, but the owner of the house, the owner is Jesus and the house is the kingdom of heaven, the owner of the house, Jesus, will say that he doesn't know who they are. And on the inside of this house, apparently, is a great crowd of people, another crowd. And they're enjoying a great banquet and dining and eating lots of food and drink and enjoying it for all eternity. So there's two crowds here, one on the inside of the door and one on the outside of the door. And this other crowd who's trying to get in just can't seem to manage it. And the really disturbing part of all this is that up until now, it's not clear what the problem is and why they can't get in. But then at last, in the last line of the gospel, Jesus reveals the problem. Here's what he says. For behold, some are last who will be first, and some are first who will be last. And here it becomes apparent that Jesus is directing his comments towards those who feel comfortable with their current status in life, those who are the first, the elite, the upper crust, the glitterati of society. And that can have multiple definitions. In his day, it included the sanctimonious religious leaders, whom he despised for their pride and hypocrisy. It includes anybody who is just a little too comfortable with themselves and their own circumstances. The message is now clear. Don't assume you're in just because you're part of the in crowd. Emulating the fashionable, the celebrity, those in high society, trying to be first, trying to climb the ladder, trying to be the best, ultimately will get you nowhere good if you're following the wrong crowd. Following the crowd may well be disastrous because when all is said and done, the in crowd may not actually be in at all. And that's the distraction I want to talk with you about today, the distraction of the crowd. And the thing is, we're all part of a crowd, or several crowds, right? We all have interests, we have people that we associate with, we have groups that we join, we have movements that we follow, we have authors and thinkers that we admire. We're all part of a crowd or several crowds. The problem is that whatever crowd you run with, it will ultimately define you. They say that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And when I heard that, one of the things I thought is that I better make sure I spend a lot more time with Jesus, because he kind of brings up the average, if you know what I mean. When you think back through your life, you will see that I'm right, that you have been part of various crowds. Think back to high school, or if you're in high school right now, think about what crowd you ran with in high school. I was the quintessential nerd, glasses and all. And I was banned from the football table and the cheerleader table in the lunchroom. I found solace in the chemistry club and the French club and the math club, which mercifully met during the lunch hour, so I didn't have to do that walk of shame, you know, through the lunchroom with your tray, wondering where you're going to sit and who's going to let you sit at their table. And because I was a nerd for a long time, I kind of bought into that. I bought into the stereotype of a nerd. I let it define me. I thought I wasn't a people person, right? Because that's the stereotype of a nerd, someone who's really smart but doesn't have a lot of common sense and doesn't really get along with people and is sort of a big introvert and everything, right? But it turns out I actually love people. I love all kinds of people. It's why I became a priest. I love you. My point is, we're all defined by the crowd we emulate. If we're not careful, the people that we are around, the group that we try to be a part of, will tell us who we are, and we will lose our true sense of identity. And believe me, it's not just a phenomenon that's unique to high school kids. At every age and station in life, we all want to fit in somewhere. We want to keep up with the Kardashians. We want to feel like we belong and are important to others. No matter how independent we think we are, we all run with a certain crowd and are influenced by that crowd. And the problem is, it's dangerous if we let ourselves be defined by that crowd. In extreme cases, it can lead to psychological problems like depression, anxiety, and loss of self-esteem. I mean, just look at social media. The research is clear. Social media causes depression and anxiety because, you know, you're looking at everybody else's life on social media and their kids are perfect and their spouses are successful and their vacations are epic and they never have any problems. Trying to follow the crowd can create jealousy and envy and conflict in the family. It can lead to poor life choices and even cause physical illnesses like eating disorders and addictions. Following a crowd is not necessarily bad in itself, but if you're not careful, it can distract you from understanding who you are and the work that God has given you to do in this life. When the pandemic was raging, you know, at the height of the pandemic, Netflix released a movie that will make you want to laugh and cry at the same time. It's called Don't Look Up. I can't recommend it because it's R-rated, and it contains vulgar and obscene language throughout, as well as a over-the-top, gratuitous scene at the end of the movie. But look, if you can get past all that, it's worth watching, because it's a dark satire of our times. It's about two low-level astronomers who discover a meteor speeding through the universe on course to make direct impact with the Earth. And because of its size and direction of travel, there's no question that this meteor is a planet killer. After verifying their observations, the two scientists realize that they have to go warn humanity about this impending disaster. The only problem is, no one cares. They finally get an audience with the President of the United States, but they have to wait all day, like 7 or 8 hours, and at the end of the day, they still don't get in to see the President. Why? Because she is focused entirely on her Supreme Court nominee getting through the Senate confirmation hearings, and he's having a bit of a problem because his former occupation was a nude model, and he doesn't even have a law degree. That's how preoccupied she was. And when the White House eventually ignored the warning, even after their findings were confirmed by Ivy League scientists, the two astronomers make their way onto the talk show circuit. But it seems there that Earthlings were more interested in everything else, like a recent breakup between two celebrities, more interested in everything else than the huge fireball hurling toward their homeland. Even when the meteor is clearly visible to the naked eye, you could see it. White House officials in total denial launch a Don't Look Up movement, complete with baseball cap logos and everything, in the hope that the Earth's population will not focus on the disaster headed their way. Now look, if you're thinking, wow, that movie cuts a little close to home, yeah, it does. It seems that the whole world is distracted and preoccupied with trivialities and superficial stuff, so much so that we can't even see the damage that we're doing. Look, the thing is, Jesus talks about two crowds, the one that's inside and the one that's outside. And the problem is, if we're part of the one that's outside, we're going to have trouble getting inside. And Jesus talks about this in another place. In John chapter 17, he's praying to God, and his one prayer is that his followers will live in the world, but not be of the world. There's a difference. And the problem is, if we let the crowds out there in the world totally define us, we're going to get off course and have a hard time getting through that narrow door. And so if you're tempted with social media, if you're tempted with all the, whatever the trivial concerns of today's in crowd are, there is a simple solution, and I want to tell you about it. It's three words. Know your why. Know your why. Why you are here on this planet. That will keep you centered. That will keep you focused. That will keep you away from all of the superficial stuff that's going on out in the world. We all have something deep down that drives us. It could be a set of values, a worldview. It could be a goal that we want to reach, a person we want to be with. Whatever you're motivated by is what drives you and gets you out of bed in the morning. And that motivation is the why of our existence. And when you are crystal clear about your why, and when your why is the purpose that God gave you for your existence, you'll never be sucked in by the trivialities of the crowd. So, what is your why? Maybe you could try defining that for yourself this week. When you do, remember that simple whys are the best. So your why should only be about 5 to 7 words in length, and it should be pretty specific. Now you may be thinking, this sounds really easy, this is no problem, but I'll tell you, over the last few weeks as I've been preparing for this homily, I've asked people, what is your why? And they look at me like I have two heads. And then, when I explain it to them, they're still befuddled. I think it's because we don't spend enough time thinking about why we really are here. So to help you out, I just want to tell you what my why is. And I'm going to be really vulnerable here because it's a little embarrassing. But here's my why. To change hearts through great preaching. Now, some of you are probably saying, oh, that's why his homilies are so dang long. He's trying to be a great preacher. And it's true. I'm trying. I love it. I love doing it. And it's not always easy. In fact, it's hard. A lot of time is spent on it. I got a whole team that helps me dream up these series and these homilies. I have editors. And I got to tell you, it's really, really hard. On the weeks that my homily actually goes pretty well, I'm on the top of the world. But on those occasions when my homily seems to tank, like maybe this one, I'm kind of crestfallen. I take it very seriously, and I know that I have a long way to go to get to that standard of great preaching, but I truly believe it's why I'm here. And I'll keep trying until I die. And I take my why seriously, and I believe that you should as well. God has a vision for your life. That is your why. And your why is to serve the whole human family with your unique abilities. Your why is to find your talents, your gifts, and to share them with the people all around you in the way that God intended. The first reading says that God comes to gather the nations. He wants to bring everybody together. That's what that first reading was all about. Instead of classifying and categorizing ourselves into various crowds, the only way to really know Jesus and one day be saved by entering through the narrow door is to be part of God's crowd. And that is the only crowd that matters at all.